considerate enough to avoid press intrusion at your son's funeral. But no, there they were lurking in the graveyard, the bastards.
Barney shook his head in disgust.
I must say, Eliza was magnificent in the way she handled them. She's a credit to you, Con.
I hope the court proceedings are going to be managed with more dignity, Annette said. I've been called as a witness for the defence, by the way. Did Barney tell you?
Yes. I'm relieved, to be honest. Lorna needs the support.
Conrad tried to keep his voice low as he leant over the bar to pick up his glass of beer.
Anyone else we know been called?
I've no idea. I've just been asked to give any dates that I'm unavailable to attend court. When is the pre-trial hearing thing? I thought that was soon.
It is. Next Thursday. I've been asked to attend a meeting with the CPS barrister. Rockin' Rupert will be there to outline what I'm to expect at the trial itself. To be fair to the chap, he's been keeping me as up-to-date as he can, but the police investigation has been so intensive that what I have to say as a witness will be minimal by the sounds of things. I presume Lorna will plead not guilty, but I've no idea what Naomi Woods is likely to plead. I don't even know what name she's using legally.
Conrad paused to take a sip of his ale.
Does it matter? So long as they get to the truth and she gets locked up. She's a psycho. Fancy using drugs to make people do what you want without them even knowing what's happening. That's the same as those date rape drugs, but weirder.
Barney, realizing that he had spoken too loudly, apologized by holding his hand up.
Sorry.
Annette filled the awkward moment. Did I tell you? Mike and Joe found an article in the Telegraph about the Chinese women in Paris using drugs to rob people. They used bunches of flowers which they'd invited elderly innocent victims to sniff after they'd stopped them to ask for directions. The drug was in the flowers and the victims didn't remember a thing afterwards. They gave themselves away because each time they asked for directions, they said they were looking for a mysterious Dr. Wang. They targeted old people, isolated them, took advantage and robbed them blind. One poor couple had about 75 grand stolen from their apartment, apparently. Clever buggers, the Chinese. The French police say the three people they arrested were a small part of a much wider criminal network operating in the same way. Annette slurped her gin and tonic as she looked for Conrad's reaction.
That has to be the one. Did the article say anything about how long the memory loss lasted for?
I think so. It was quite detailed. Look it up. It's online.
Chapter 36. The courtroom fell silent as Conrad took the stand as the opening witness for the prosecution. Rupert Van Dahl, in gown and wig, kept eye contact with his client, who was approached by the court usher and asked if he preferred to swear on the Bible or to affirm that he would tell the truth. He tried to remain composed as he read from the card.
I do solemnly, sincerely, and truly declare and affirm that the evidence I shall give shall be the truth, the whole truth, and nothing but the truth.
He was trembling as he handed the card back to the usher and, as he did so, raised his head towards the dock at the far end of the courtroom. There, in a glass-fronted cubicle, sitting 4 or 5 feet apart, were Lorna and Naomi, flanked by prison escort staff. The two accused women were neatly dressed in business suits, staring straight ahead, expressionless. Lorna's hair was scraped back in a severe ponytail. They looked out from behind their glass prison into the modern windowless courtroom, where the legal teams sat at long beechwood veneered desks, which mirrored those of the judge and the court reporter. The whole room was efficiently lit with spotlights atop the wooden-clad walls, and natural light streaming through a large skylight. The number of public and press present in the courtroom was restricted, with the vast majority clamouring for news and photographs outside the square modern edifice of the Crown Court in Carnarvon. Conrad had been advised by the witness support officer to address the judge and the members of the jury when answering questions from the stand. He didn't need reminding. The judge sat to his immediate right, necessitating a 45-degree turn in order to see the elderly man in glasses who would be guiding the jury and managing the trial. Rupert Van Dahl commenced the case for the prosecution with a simple line of questioning.
Mr. Neal, could you tell the court in your own words what you recall of the evening of Saturday the 13th of May, 2017? Your statement indicates that you had spent the day with your ex-girlfriend,
the accused, Lorna Yates, in an effort to patch up your relationship, which you had ended some 4 months previously. Is that correct?
Conrad was prepared for this.
Yes, that's correct.
Would you mind telling the court how you met Lorna Yates?
We met through work. Lorna started as a researcher with Channel 7 a few months before I began on the first series of The Truth Behind the Lies. She carried out much of the background information gathering for each of the documentaries, and we met shortly before the filming of the first case in March 2016.
Did your wife know about your affair at that time?
No, she didn't.
You state that you fell in love with Lorna Yates during the time you were having an affair. So please can you explain to the members of the jury why you decided to end your relationship in February this year?
Conrad had also been expecting this particular line of questioning. Even so, he found that his well-rehearsed lines had escaped his memory, and he stumbled through the explanation. I was under considerable pressure from my wife. She had found out about Lorna. The TV series was a spectacular success, you see, and Delia, my wife, is also my business manager. She was furious that I had jeopardized our financial future and undermined the trust of the viewing public. I was weak. I should have followed my heart instead of worrying about my reputation.
He scanned the faces of the jury and saw only minor changes in the facial expressions of two women. The rest remained resolutely deadpan. Rupert had warned him not to try for any sympathy, and now Conrad knew why.
Realizing your error, you pursued Lorna Yates, desperate to reignite your relationship. Isn't that so?
Yes, it is.
Did anyone encourage you to do this?
My colleague, Annette, she gave me the confidence to at least try.
She informed you of where Lorna Yates had moved for work, and, as you say in your statement, that happened to be Bangor, the very city where your children attended university. Did that ever strike you as more than a coincidence, Mr. Neil?
No,
came a slightly hesitant response.
What do you know about Lorna Yates's private life and her history before she met you?
Well, as far as I'm aware, her parents were originally from Cardiff, and although she grew up in Herefordshire, she always calls herself Welsh. She's an only child, good education, went to university to study English literature, but I can't recall where. Her CV said she had worked in customer services and public relations in London before landing her job with Channel 7. I once met one of her previous partners, a chap called Darrell, who she lived with in Camden for several years. Apart from that, we socialized in the same group. Her friends at work were my friends too. They still are.
I see. What can you tell us about Lorna's mental health? Has there ever been any indication of a vengeful nature in her behavior towards others?
No. I don't know anything about that. She's always been sensible, balanced, and caring from my experience.
Conrad shifted his weight from one foot to another. He shot a puzzled look at Rupert Van Dahl.
Take us back to the time of the assault. After dinner on Saturday the 13th of May this year, if you will. You and Lorna had a meal together in the restaurant at the management center in Bangor, and after walking Lorna Yates back to her car, what did you see?
Conrad produced the well-rehearsed chronology of events leading up to the moment that Lorna knocked on his hotel door that night.
And that is the last thing you remember, Mr. Neil. You pulled at Lorna Yates to get her out of harm's way and grabbed at the person wearing dark clothing who was forcing their way through the door.
Yes, I have no recall of anything until the next morning.
When did you realize that it was Lorna Yates who had inflicted life-changing injuries on your face, which resulted in the loss of your right eye?
I didn't ever realize. I was told that the attack on me had been filmed and that this showed Lorna deliberately cutting me with a knife.
My lord, the film of this attack is central evidence, and my client is aware that the jury have seen this recording in private because of its disturbing nature.
However, for the purposes of the public hearing, still photographs have been produced to demonstrate the specific act of harm undertaken by the defendant, Lorna Yates, and which, as evidence will prove, was filmed by Naomi Woods as a conspiracy of revenge against Mr. Conrad Neal, the victim in this case. The usher ensured that each member of the jury had sight of the photographic evidence. Mr. Neal, in the photograph labelled Exhibit A1, can you confirm for the court who the two people are in that photograph? Conrad inhaled deeply to help steady his shaking hands as he held the photo in front of his left eye.
That's me lying on the bed, and Lorna is holding the knife.
For the record, Lorna Yates is holding a knife with two hands, cutting into your forehead as she kneels over you, lying on a hotel bed. Do you recall this happening at the time?
No.
Conrad shook his head and looked to the judge.
I can't remember this happening to me.
A small quaver in his voice prompted a comment from the judge.
We appreciate how difficult this is, Mr. Neal, but if you would, please continue to answer the questions as they are put to you.
How could Lorna have done that?
The jury and Conrad were asked to examine three further photographs, including one taken by the police, of Conrad's injuries once he had reached A&E on the Sunday morning.
In the preceding weeks, you had received a number of threatening texts, Mr. Neal. Can you tell the jury more about these, and who you thought these were from?
The first text arrived at about the same time I tried to get back in touch with Lorna.
On the same day, in fact, April 9th.
Yes, I believe it was. At first I didn't know who it was from, but they must have been in the park watching me. After the first one or two, I also received a typed letter, unsigned. I thought then that the text and the letter were from Tessa Carlton.
If it pleases the court, Rupert Van Dahl addressed the judge, it may be of help for me to put this reference into context. Tessa Carlton is the sister of Helena Chorston Hawley, who was murdered by her husband, Matthew Hawley, the subject of Mr. Neal's documentary at the time this offence took place. It was presumed by my client that Tessa Carlton had written instructing him to desist from seeking to interview her. Whoever wrote the letter expressed a wish to remain out of the public eye. Is that correct, Mr. Neal?
Yes.
Mr. Neal, during the course of the police investigation, you helped to identify the second accused, Naomi Woods, as the person behind the camera filming your assault at the hands of Lorna Yates. Is that also correct?
Yes, that's correct.
Is it not also the case that you believed Naomi Woods to be Tessa Carlton?
Objection!
The defense barrister for Naomi Woods, a formidable-looking woman who bore an uncanny resemblance to Delia, jumped up from her seat.
Leading question and irrelevant.
Rupert addressed the bench.
My lord, I'm merely seeking to establish my client's knowledge of the identities of the accused.
You may continue, but make your reference clear.
Thank you, my lord. Mr. Neal, did you know that Lorna Yates does not have Welsh parents, and that she did not grow up in Herefordshire?
No.
Conrad stared hard into Rupert Van Dahl's eyes. Then beyond him, he focused on Lorna's impassive face.
No further questions at this time, my lord.
Rupert Van Dahl took his seat.
What the fuck's going on? Rupert warned me to expect the unexpected, but why did they keep this from me? Your witness, Mrs. Steele.
Chapter 37. Conrad swallowed hard as he faced the sharp-featured woman in gown and wig, about to begin her cross-examination and a theatrical presentation of her argument.
Thank you, my lord. Mr. Neal, my learned friend Mr. Van Dahl would have us believe that you are a stable individual of sound mind and an upstanding pillar of society. I suggest that you are in fact unreliable as a witness in this case. Tell me, Apart from your appalling memory of events at the hotel on the night of the 13th and into the early hours of the 14th of May this year, you also lost touch with reality a few weeks later while undergoing treatment at the Royal Manchester Eye Hospital. You were cared for and given medication by a psychiatrist for an adjustment reaction. Is that correct?
Yes.
What can you remember about that?
Nothing. I blacked out. I was watching the filmed evidence of my assault when I lost it.
He couldn't think what to say. In fact, he could barely concentrate on the words being spoken. He wanted to sit in the corner of the witness box and hug his knees to regain control over his racing thoughts. You say you lost it. I see. When you took your discharge against medical advice, your eye surgeon states he had concerns about your mental state. That we know to be true. Tell the court, have you attended the psychology appointments set up for you to help deal with your traumas?
I went to one.
I do hope that was of some help. Perhaps you didn't require further psychological treatment if you only went to one appointment.
Mrs. Steele's sarcasm was not lost on Conrad or Rupert Van Dahl, who objected. With a sickly grimace, Mrs. Steele apologized and continued.
Mr. Neal, my learned friend suggested in his presentation to the court that you and Lorna Yates met last year and fell in love. I put it to you that you lied. You and Lorna Yates go back a lot further than that, and indeed you first met her in 2010, 7 years ago, Mr. Neal.
No.
Conrad arched backwards, and a deep frown appeared on his face.
I have no recollection of meeting Lorna before she came to Channel 7.
Surely you must remember.
No?
Let me help your unreliable memory. You were a regular client at a club called La Maison in London, conveniently sited a short distance from the studios where Saturday Night Live took place. You hosted that particular show for 5 years, Mr. Neal, and during that time you were a frequent visitor to La Maison, so much so that if there had been a La Maison loyalty card, you would have reaped many benefits, I'm sure.
A gentle ripple of amused interest was heard from those in the courtroom, during which Conrad caught an exchange of looks between Naomi Woods and Lorna, but he couldn't read what was meant, feeling a hollow coldness in his legs, as if the strength in his muscles was ebbing away. He was forced to lean against the front of the witness stand, gripping the smooth, pale wood under each hand, as Mrs. Steele continued her rapier-like approach to undermining the prosecution's case.
Your membership fee included the personal services of an escort with additional costs incurred for individual choice from a menu of sexual pleasures. That's what it says right here in the membership information.
Mrs. Steele waved a leaflet in the air.
According to the membership information and invoices, your preference was for young, flexible white females who specialized in oral sex. Is that right, Mr. Neal? You paid for sex on a regular basis.
Conrad saw his barrister turn to the prosecution team sitting immediately behind him to whisper questions and stab his forefinger at the papers in front of them. Infuriation was written on Rupert Vandal's face as he looked back up at the witness box.
That was years ago. Three of us went after the show on a Saturday night. Fame and fortune, sex and drink, it was normal back then.
Mr. Neal, please answer the question.
I did go there, yes, but I don't recall meeting Lorna.
You should remember. You went there week in and week out over a period of several years. I put it to you, Mr. Neal, that when you met Lorna again, you knew exactly who she was and used her past to force her into providing sexual services to you personally. I also put it to you that it was she, not you, that ended the relationship, and she tried to break away from your charmless blackmail by securing another job, far away. You said just now that you persuaded her, not the other way around. Was that a lie?
No, it wasn't a lie. I did go after her, but I swear I had no idea she worked as an escort. That was years ago. She can't have been one of the girls. It doesn't make sense.
Do you deny that you were a member at a club called La Maison?
No.
Do you deny that you made use of the escort girls at La Maison?
No, I don't deny any of that, but I didn't know Lorna used to work there. I swear.
Mrs. Steele, the lead counsel for Naomi Wood's defense, paused as she arranged the papers on the desk in front of her.
Mr. Neal, can I ask you to confirm whether you have ever met the other defendant, Naomi Woods, in person before today?
I've met her before, but she said her name was Chloe Jordan. She was my son's girlfriend.
That's what you believe to be the truth?
Yes, I thought she was, at the time.
Did you ever meet my client, Naomi Woods, at La Maison?
No, I don't think so.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. I would like to ask the jury to look again at the still photographs taken from the digital video film that the prosecution have presented as evidence in this case. My lord, two of the photos presented to the court show Mr. Neal preparing to strike and physically assault my learned friend's client whilst in a state of sexual arousal. There were a number of these assaults, which were viewed by my lord and by the jury, during which Lorna Yates can be seen reeling from the force of the blows. Mr. Neal, can you deny you assaulted my client?
No, of course I can't.
Objection, my lord! My client has already made it abundantly clear that he has no recall of any of the events that took place in the hotel room that evening.
Sustained. Mrs. Steele, please rephrase your question.
Yes, my lord. Mr. Neal, is this you in these photographs?
Conrad stared, transfixed by the scene in the photo, perplexed. The judge coughed.
Mr. Neal, you must answer the question.
What was the question?
Is that you in the photographs?
Yes.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. No further questions.
Harry Drysdale, the barrister representing Lorna, stood for his cross-examination of Conrad on behalf of his client. He had a kindlier disposition.
Mr. Neal, thank you for trying to answer my colleague's questions. I'm sure the court appreciates the amount of time you spent in the witness box.
I have only one or two more questions for you. Firstly, do you believe Lorna Yates willingly assaulted you?
No, I do not.
Why not?
Because I believe we were both drugged by the intruder, Naomi Woods.
Can I make this clear for the jury, my lord? The main prosecution witness and victim in this case does not support the view of the prosecution that my client, Lorna Yates, is guilty of the crime for which she has been charged. No further questions.
Good cop, bad cop. I get it.
Thank you, Mr. Neal. You may step down.
He barely registered his walk from the witness stand to his seat in the courtroom next to Eliza, where the usher offered him cold water. He tried not to spill the contents as he gratefully accepted the much-needed drink, trying to manage his jangling nerves and control his breathing. Next to take the witness stand was D.S. Jenkins, who was asked for her version of events. It was a factual account, spoken clearly and concisely. Rupert Van Dahl emphasized the extent of the injuries to Conrad's face, his client's interactions with Lorna, and D.S. Jenkins' observations relating to his amnesia. When Mrs. Steele cross-examined D.S. Jenkins, she took a direct, aggressive approach to bolster her argument that the scene at the hotel was more reminiscent of a snuff movie than a romantic sexual encounter, wouldn't you say?
I'm not qualified to comment, Jenkins replied, a stern expression firmly fixed in place.
When you examined the scene of the crime, what struck you about the items in the room other than the clothing?
I'm sorry, I don't understand the question.
I do apologize, Detective Sergeant Jenkins. Let me be more specific. Were there items in the room that related directly to the injury sustained by Mr. Neal? And if so, what were they, and why were they significant to the police investigation?
D.S. Jenkins confirmed her understanding, and paused for thought before answering. The items of particular interest were the knife used in the attack and a number of lengths of rope which had been placed neatly on the dressing table. The knife had not been wiped clean, and I repeat, there were no defensive wounds found on Mr. Neal's forearms that would indicate self-defense. These types of wounds were significant by their absence. However, we also found a blindfold and some tie wraps,
which led to an initial hypothesis that Mr. Neal was unaware of the threat posed to him by the assailant. Other items of interest included a double-ended dildo, several other sex toys, and a number of condoms. Six, as I said in my statement.
Really? Where the hell did they come from?
Why would the rope and the sex toys be of interest in relation to the injuries sustained by the alleged victim in this case? D.S. Jenkins hesitated. As well as the injurious cuts to his face, Mr. Neal had lacerations or marks on his back and buttocks, which were found to match with the rope. According to the forensic reports, there was evidence of the sex aids having been used by both parties. Yes, that is indeed the case. Thank you for clarifying that, D.S. Jenkins. Most helpful.
Conrad was still trembling from his experience in the witness box and from the shock of being told that Lorna, the woman he'd left his life for, the woman he loved for her common sense and humour, the woman he had planned to spend the rest of his life with, was being accused of behaving like a first-class sex-crazed psychopath. He was so caught up in the horror of the situation that he failed to listen in full to the details of the evidence being given by D.S. Fionn Jenkins, or to understand the implications.
Call Detective Chief Inspector Anwell.
Gethin Anwell, in pristine suit, shirt and tie, took to the stand to be examined by Rupert Van Dahl, who continued to insist that the motive for assault had been that of revenge.
DCI Anwell, you interviewed my client at length in the hospital and in the police station at Bangor when he was fit enough to attend. Did you at any time suspect that Mr. Conrad Neal was not telling the truth about the events as he recalled them from the night of the 13th of May?
No. Mr. Neal was always cooperative, and in fact, he consistently tried to convince the investigating team that he and Lorna Yates had been the victims of a revenge plot by a woman by the name of Tessa Carlton. During our interviews, Mr. Neal identified Naomi Watts as the most likely person to be Tessa Carlton, based on photographic evidence, text he'd received, and the chronology of events.
Did he at any time say that he had met either Lorna Yates or Naomi Woods 6 years previously?
No. He reported that he had known Lorna Yates since February 2016, but that he'd never met Naomi Woods. However, once he had identified Chloe Jordan as possibly being the same person as Naomi Woods, it was obvious that he had met her face to face.
What did your investigation reveal about Miss Woods?
Naomi Woods had a legitimate job as a businesswoman, working with her partner Joshua Hawley, running a recruitment service, Hawley Recruitment Solutions. She was well qualified and experienced in that role and respected in her industry. She had previously worked for Helena Chorston Hawley, who was murdered by her husband in 2014. But we know that Naomi Woods did not feature as a suspect in any way, although she gave evidence at the trial in that case. On investigation of her past history, we found a connection between Naomi Woods, Tessa Carlton, and Lorna Yates.
Can you clarify for the court what that connection was, please?
Yes. All three had been patients at Willow Hall, an adolescent unit in Suffolk. We also identified that after disappearing from Willow Hall, Naomi Woods had worked as a chambermaid at a gentleman's club in London, where Lorna Yates had also been employed as a barmaid.
Do you have a record of the name of that club?
Yes. La Maison. There were hushed mutterings from the public gallery.
Did all three of these women meet or know each other at any given time?
Yes. We found records for Lorna Yates that confirmed her admission to Willow Hall, coinciding with the time that Tessa Carlton and Naomi Woods were resident, albeit an overlap of merely 2 weeks.
What happened to Lorna Yates and Tessa Carlton after they left Willow Hall?
Tessa Carlton disappears from any records, and we have reopened an investigation into her disappearance. According to formal records, Lorna Yates appears in stable employment in 2012 with a PR company in London. She was 25 by then, so we had a gap of 8 years that were not fully accounted for. Miss Yates insisted that she was travelling through Europe and the UK and being paid cash in hand for casual labour jobs in pubs and clubs while studying for an open university degree, and she also did some agency administrative work. We have been unable to corroborate every single one of her stories. However, we have confirmed the majority of her employment history. Our investigation also confirms that she lived in Camden for a period of 12 months between October 2013 and November 2014. After that, she moved into a flat in Forest Hill. There are no records of any previous contacts with the judicial system or other health institutions.
Thank you, DCI Anwell. That's most illuminating. Taking you back to the assault on my client, can you outline for the jury why you believe that Conrad Neal could be unable to recall the events that took place in his hotel room on the night of the 13th of May 2017?
Yes. Mr. Neal's last recollection was of a powdery substance being blown into his face just before he grabbed hold of the alleged intruder who had forced their way in through the door to Mr. Neal's hotel room, room 110. Our forensic team found evidence of a powdered substance and had this analyzed. It was found to be a refined synthesized version of a drug that has been used previously to render victims entirely suggestible and leaves them with no recollection of events. The original substance derives from a South American plant, the Borachero tree.
Is this substance known to have been used before for criminal purposes?
Yes, but this version was more refined and more predictable in its effects. Our conclusion initially was that both Mr. Neal and Miss Yates had been affected by this. But on examination of clothing, only minimal powder was found on the clothes Lorna Yates was wearing when she entered the hotel room. However, there was a significant pattern of powder still remaining in amongst the bloodstains on the toweling robe worn by Mr. Neal when he opened the hotel room door. Powder was also found on the door, the light switch, and the wall immediately to the right of the doorway.
Your conclusion was, therefore, that only Mr. Neal had been drugged.
Unfortunately, that proved difficult to ascertain. We found evidence of the powder, and our interviews with Mr. Neal and Miss Yates indicated memory loss in each case, but it has not been possible to state categorically that either of them suffered from amnesia directly as a result of deliberate intoxication.
I see. But it is possible.
Yes, it's possible.
Chapter 38. The heat from the central wood-burning stove could not penetrate the chill of dread that had made its home in Conrad's knotted stomach. He sat at the kitchen table in a rented stone and slate cottage hidden away in Llan Rhug. The bleak November rain pelted down outside the windows, adding to the air of general grey gloom. Rupert Van Dahl took a sip of strong coffee before trying again to explain himself.
"Look, I know it was a shock, but if we had warned you beforehand, then there would have been accusations flying around about coaching witnesses. The police have carried out an extensive investigation, and the court will get to hear irrefutable evidence that will prove the guilt of the accused."
"Fuck me, Rupert. You could have said something before I was hung out to dry. At this moment in proceedings, I look like a liar and a pervert. Christ, how am I supposed to deal with this mess? I've lost everything. Everything apart from Eliza, and now she knows about La Maison, she'll probably disown me. I don't even know what to believe about Lorna anymore. How could she have kept her past that secret? And why?"
Rupert raised his eyebrows.
"You did the same. I don't suppose she knew about your habit of procuring sexual services, which you should have at least mentioned to me. You made us look as if we had deliberately withheld information. Please tell me there are no more surprises about your private life, and, while you're at it, you can give me chapter and verse on La Maison."
Conrad heard the resignation in his barrister's tone.
"I never mentioned it because it wasn't relevant. It was years ago. If you'd been married to Delia, you'd have gone there too."
"I doubt it."
"No, really. The place was full of England's finest legal and medical minds, and half the MPs of Westminster. It was a smart club for discerning professionals whose sex drives outweighed that of their wives and partners. It wasn't a seedy dive with scabby, drug-fueled prostitutes locked behind doors. Quite the opposite."
La Maison was a high-class establishment with a bar and piano music, where like-minded men could be sure of a warm welcome, attention, and a room for the night in the company of intelligent women who found sex enjoyable. Expensive, but worth it.
Tell me whether you used the services of either of the two defendants at La Maison before they take the witness stand.
Lorna was never an escort there. I knew most of the girls intimately, and it can't be possible that one of them was Lorna. No way.
Not a chance.
I've slept with Lorna. I know every inch of that woman.
As for Naomi, who knows?
It's possible.
He stood up from the table and paced the length of the stone-flagged floor, a glass of red wine in his hand. Rupert agreed.
You have a good point. We can find no indication that Lorna ever worked as an escort at La Maison. I've had an investigator on the case since this morning's revelations in court, and two members of staff at La Maison did remember her working behind the bar there during the time you were a regular customer. So you'll have to be patient until we have the chance to put the record straight on that fact.
Look, Conrad, the trial is going to be a long one, and you may have to hear information that you don't agree with. But please understand, we have a strategy in mind with which to undermine the defense's case. They are insisting on self-defense as an argument, and blackmail and revenge as the motives, but that simply does not wash.
Too bloody right it doesn't. How many more witnesses are you calling?
Two more. Our strengths will come during the cross-examination, so try not to worry.
Conrad snorted at Rupert.
Try not to worry. Are you having a laugh at my expense? Can you imagine the headlines tomorrow? Dirty pervert TV presenter has roving eye cut out by ex-prostitute lover. Or some such shit. God, what a mess.
Who are our last witnesses?
Dr. Sarah Tyrrell, and then finally Delia.
Delia? My ex-wife, Delia. You're either very clever or exceptionally stupid, and I have no idea which.
Conrad knocked back the last of the wine in his glass, slammed it down on the table, and walked away towards the open-plan lounge.
Shut the door on your way out. We're done.
Rupert Van Dahl swiftly gathered the papers from the table and left the cottage under cover of darkness, leaving Conrad with his thoughts. Slumped in a high-back chair, which was in dire need of reupholstering, he held the phone to his ear, waiting for Eliza to say something in reply to his question.
What do you want me to say, Dad? I understand about the extramarital affairs, and I understand you wanted to divorce Mum. But do I understand why you made regular use of escorts for sex?
No.
Why couldn't you have a wank instead? Then we wouldn't have to wait for the next wave of sordid details to come out in the press, and I wouldn't be made to feel tainted by your life choices. Some prude you turned out to be.
Sorry, Eliza. I never wanted any of this to happen. I don't know what else to say to you, other than sorry. Please don't come to the hearing. You stay out of it, and keep yourself away from the press furore and public scrutiny as much as you can.
Dad, I'm still here for you. Call me every day, okay? Anyway, like it or not, I'm coming to court tomorrow to give you my support. But Mum says please don't try to speak to her, as she can't guarantee she'll be civil.
Conrad had to smile at his daughter's comment, and admire her family loyalty. Delia's hair remained solidly in place, although the card in her hands was vibrating rapidly as she read her affirmation out loud to the court in a quavering, high-pitched voice. Rupert Van Dahl stood and gave her a transient grin of reassurance before asking his opening question.
Mrs. Neal, for how many years have you known my client, Mr. Conrad Neal?
I've known Conrad for over 25 years.
In that time, has he ever been physically violent towards you?
No, never.
Has he ever raised a hand in anger and threatened to physically hurt you in any way?
No, never.
Could you please describe to the court what level of intimacy you had in your marriage before you decided to divorce?
Conrad and I had drifted apart over the years, and our physical relationship was minimal.
Were you aware of his use of escorts in the past?
Yes. He would make use of a club in London where he stayed at the weekend. I did know about it, although we never discussed it openly.
Did you know about his affair with Miss Lorna Yates?
Yes.
I asked him to stop seeing her in order to salvage his career.
I'm his business manager, and the public expected him to be seen with me, as his wife, at engagements. He was besotted with her, so they started seeing each other again in the weeks before he was attacked.
Did that make you angry?
Yes, but it also made us decide to divorce, which we probably should have done years ago. We stayed together for the children and for his career.
Conrad couldn't quite comprehend what his wife was doing for him. He looked at the faces of the jury and saw their admiration for her honesty. Rupert Van Dahl completed his questioning, making way for the impressively cutting tongue of Mrs. Steele.
"Here comes old Iron Breeches. Watch out, Delia. The cow made mincemeat of Dr. Tyrrell, poor woman."
He had not been surprised when Dr. Tyrrell had immediately left the courtroom following her grilling by Lorna's brief, and then by Mrs. Steele. Between them, they undermined the psychiatrist's statement and questioned her professional opinion about the three girls who had been in her care at Willow Hall. At least she had remembered the facts about who absconded when and with whom.
Lorna had been treated for depression and discharged back into the local authority care system. Tessa Carlton and Naomi Woods had absconded together and never returned.
Mrs. Steele had taken the opportunity to condemn the standards of care at Willow Hall, and Dr. Tyrrell eventually crumpled under her cross-examination, confusing the details of each of the three girls, and thus undermining her credibility as a witness.
"Any re-examination, Mr. Van Dahl?"
"If I may, my lord."
Rupert Van Dahl stood again.
"Dr. Tyrrell, you said to my learned colleague that Naomi Woods had strong psychopathic traits that were similar to those of Tessa Carlton. In your view, was Naomi Woods, the defendant, capable of influencing Tessa Carlton?"
"Yes. Tessa was much more obvious in her manipulation of the other girls in the unit. She was boastful and a bully. But Naomi was more skilled and more successful. She would watch and learn about her fellow patients. Once she had identified their strengths and their weaknesses, she would groom them, for want of a better expression. She was crafty and underhand."
"Did you ever see Lorna Yates being targeted by either Tessa Carlton or Naomi Woods in an attempt to bully her in any way?"
"No, not that I was aware of. As I said, Lorna kept to herself. She didn't mix with the others."
"No further questions, my lord."
Mrs. Steele now took aim at Delia Neal and played to the audience once more.
"It's very admirable of you to stand as witness for your feckless, adulterous ex-husband, Mrs. Neal. One can only assume he must be worth the maintenance money. Mrs. Neal, you say you tolerated your husband's infidelity and that your sexual relationship with him had been minimal. How long was your marriage purely one of financial convenience, would you say?"
"Probably for the last 10 years."
"So would it be fair to assume that you have no real idea of your husband's sexual preferences?"
"I don't understand what you mean."
"Has your husband ever indulged in bondage, whipping, use of sex aids or sexual violence with you or anyone else?"
Mrs. Steele swiveled slowly as she shared the words with the court and the jury.
"He certainly never has with me, no."
"But could he with someone else?"
"He could have. I wouldn't know."
"No, you wouldn't know. Thank you. No further questions."
Mrs. Steele sat down and had a whispered conference with Mr. Harry Drysdale, the brief for Lorna Yates, who indicated that he didn't need to ask any additional questions on behalf of his client. Delia appeared bewildered as she was escorted from the witness stand and seated on Eliza's right.
"What a bitch,"
Delia cursed under her breath into her daughter's right ear. The judge stirred.
"Does that conclude the case for the prosecution, Mr. Van Dahl?"
"Yes, my lord."
"Then we begin the case for the defense. Mrs. Steele, you continue to lead on the case for Naomi Woods,
with your learned colleague, Mr. Drysdale, as the counsel for Miss Lorna Yates.
That is correct, my lord,
confirmed a smiling Mrs. Steele.
I suggest we adjourn for lunch, and then you may call your first witness when we reconvene at 1:30.
Conrad sat next to Barney in the public gallery, waiting for Annette, who had just completed giving evidence as the first witness for the defence. She had been called to stand, and her role was to paint a positive picture of Lorna as a hard-working professional who had been led by Conrad to believe they would have a future together. Annette answered in measured terms, confirming that Lorna was a resilient individual who had shown genuine affection for Conrad and who was not known to behave vindictively.
She had her heart broken when he ended their relationship, but then again, he was devastated too.
Conrad exchanged a hopeful grin with Barney, relieved that there was a positive representation beginning to emerge of the relationship he and Lorna shared. His optimism was short-lived, for within moments of Rupert Van Dahl taking up the cross-examination for the prosecution, Annette's contribution was all but nullified.
You have known Lorna Yates for 4 years, you say. Did she ever mention to you that she had worked in a brothel?
No.
Did she reveal to you that she'd spent time in an institution for mental health problems, or been brought up in care?
No.
Annette's shoulders dropped.
We can safely say, then, that your friendship was not as close as you have led us to believe. Did Lorna Yates talk to you about how she and Naomi Woods rekindled their friendship when they worked together at La Maison?
No.
Surely she must have mentioned that she had deliberately applied for a job in Bangor at BBC Wales to be close to where Conrad Neil's children were at university, and therefore tantalisingly near to where he was likely to be seen.
No, I don't believe that was her intention at all. She moved from London once they split up in order not to see him again. She wasn't just based in Bangor, she worked for other studios and departments for BBC Wales.
The police investigation strongly indicates that Naomi Woods and Lorna Yates conspired to bring about the humiliation and personal destruction of Conrad Neil. The evidence suggests that they worked together to entice him into having a night of sexual extremes. They drugged him, filmed the action, and then Lorna Yates, as the woman scorned, deliberately disfigured my client in an act of violent vengeance. You visited Lorna Yates in prison 7 times in all. What did she tell you about the attack on my client?
Not much. She can't remember any of it. But she didn't set him up. I'm sure of it.
I put it to you that Lorna Yates used you as a friend of convenience, and that you know little or nothing about her. My esteemed legal colleagues have sought to paint a rosy picture, where in fact a darker truth resides. No further questions.
Conrad was astounded by how swiftly and efficiently the barristers twisted words and facts to suit. But most of all, he was dismayed at the misuse of facts to guide the jury into believing their argument.
My own barrister is condemning Lorna to being found guilty of something she didn't do. Is this the final twist of the knife from Tessa fucking Carlton?
He looked at Naomi Woods, sitting placidly in the dock, and saw her aim an almost imperceptible smirk at her brief. Whatever their scheme was, it was on course. From where he was sitting, Mrs. Steele was playing a game of double agents. She led for the defence, but in favour of her own client, and was setting up Lorna to take the blame for grievous bodily harm and attempted blackmail. Mr. Drysdale would have to up his game if Lorna were to stand any chance of a not guilty verdict. Mr. Harry Drysdale stood to re-examine Annette.
You said just now that my client, Lorna Yates, failed to recall any of the events which occurred on the night of May 13 this year. During your visits to see her in prison, at any time did she disclose knowledge of the events of that night? Anything at all?
No. She really had no memory of it. Nothing. She remembered waking up and finding Conrad seriously injured. Lorna was convinced that an intruder had attacked them. She was devastated to be charged with assault. Lorna isn't capable of attacking anyone like that deliberately.
Conrad let out a slow breath, and Barney did the same, sitting beside him, hands clasped between his knees. Chapter 39. Naomi took out her mobile phone. These were considered contraband in prison, but inmates managed to smuggle them in without too much difficulty, mostly to order drug delivery by drone, or to stay in touch with the felonious outside world. She recorded her diary via the small camera as a video selfie. She couldn't imagine how she would cope inside the remand center without her personal chat with Conrad. Once complete, she would simply upload it to her data cloud. She sat on her bed, leaning against the wall.
I should have been a lawyer. They are among the most highly paid liars, short of world leaders and politicians. What a shame the opportunity never arose. I would have been a QC by now, I reckon. Still, there's no use in dwelling on fantasies. I had a simple mission in life to complete instead, which I would have done if you hadn't have cocked it up for me, Conrad. I look at you across the courtroom, sitting with what's left of your sad, pathetic family or with your fat friend, and I experience a certain satisfaction at what I've achieved of your demise so far. Your face is a mangled mess. Your false eye was enough to frighten children, I hear, and that eye patch barely makes up for it. Your son is dead. Lorna's going to prison for years. Your wife divorced you. More's the pity. Your daughter despises you, and your once adoring public are ridiculing you. Yet I could have done so much better. Yes, really, I could. As far as Delia is concerned, I should have thought that through more thoroughly. You would have suffered to a much greater extent if I'd managed to keep you two incarcerated in holy matrimony and trapped inside that hideous house for the rest of your days. Pure torture. I would have put cameras everywhere and watched the destruction like a soap opera or death by nagging in the Big Brother house. Conrad has entered the diary room. He can take no more of Delia's incessant bleating about money, and he's hanging a rope from the rafters. What a missed opportunity. And, you know, I was too impulsive killing Freddy so early on in the script. I could kick myself for that error. I was sloppy and directionless, probably because he was making too much emotional fuss. This is what happens when I become angry, Conrad. You made me so fucking infuriated by undoing years of my work that I become impulsive. Me and Josh had a respectable business, a house worth a million, with no one any the wiser about Helena or Tessa, their parents, or Richard. Then you started asking your questions. This is a pattern that repeats itself, Conrad. When people don't do as I ask, or as I tell them, then I have to be rid of them. Helena was a good pupil, but she should never have tried to come between my prize and me. I warned her, and like you, she tried to take me on at my own game. Silly idea. Tessa made exactly the same basic error, stupid bitch. Her mouth was her downfall. Too full of her own self-importance, too keen to show off how evil she was. It's us quiet ones you have to watch, just like Dr. Tyrrell said. At least Freddy made it into one of the major scenes. Tessa didn't even make it through Scene 1, Act 1. She's somewhere in Elvendon Forest, underneath a hump in one of the many cycle paths. I've no idea where. They all look the same to me. Decent of me to keep her memory alive by introducing her to you and to Matthew Hawley, don't you think? Letters from a dead woman. An email from an ex-boyfriend of Helena's that doesn't exist. You work it out. Mrs. Steele is my heroine. She takes no prisoners, that woman, and the jury are convinced that Lorna put me up to filming you both. Excellent skills of persuasion and a confident performance. Brava, Mrs. Steele. I don't even remember your Lorna being at Willow Hall. She sounded like a proper goody-two-shoes, the young Lorna Yates. But by the time I did see her at La Maison, she wasn't so passive. If I'm right, she wasn't a bad barmaid, actually. Nice figure, healthy-looking. Flirty with the clientele, but efficient with her service. Don't despair, Conrad. She wasn't escort material, not in a million years. Like me, though. She was there to use and take advantage of men. In her case, it was to make a move into a better career on the back of the connections to be made in a place like that. No questions are asked about your fictional CV at interviews, if the person recommending you for the job is the boss. She went into marketing and public relations, and I went into recruitment just as I'd planned. I never saw her again until I spied her on the pier with you. Even then I couldn't place where I'd seen her before. It was Delia who was so helpful in the golf club at filling certain gaps for me, without me asking her a single question. Bless her. My Josh did well in the witness stand this afternoon, don't you think? He sang my praises. And then, when he had the jury feeling sorry for him, he wept. I have to say, I'm irritated that he felt it necessary to shake your hand when he sat next to you afterwards. I'll have to consider whether I'll file that gesture under good manners in the face of adversity or betrayal. It will depend on the outcome of this trial, and the next one. Mrs. Steele thinks that even if I'm found guilty of conspiracy in this case, I'll get a not-guilty verdict for Freddy's murder, based on the circumstantial nature of the forensic evidence. No witnesses, you see. He had an unlucky brush with asphyxiation, and I had an alibi. Not cast iron, but good enough to place doubt in the minds of any jury. Anyway, shall we see what happens next? Exciting, isn't it?
Chapter 40. Conrad couldn't take his eyes off Lorna's face as she stood pale in the witness stand. He prayed silently for her to be strong, and not to cave in to the bullying tactics of Mrs. Steele in her aim to place Lorna in the frame for assault and attempted blackmail. Mr. Drysdale began his examination of her statement. "Miss Yates, you say you have no memory of the evening in question from the time of entering Mr. Conrad Neal's hotel room, and that you did not notice anyone following you as you approached his room. Is that correct?"
"Yes."
"You state that you recall nothing until you awoke after 5 the next morning to find Mr. Neal seriously injured. What was the first thing you did?"
"I made use of a towel to try and cover the wounds on his head, then I called the hotel reception to ask for help and to get the emergency services."
"The court has heard from Mr. Martin Fryer, the duty manager, that room 110 was in a state of disarray when he arrived, and that you were trying to care for Mr. Neal, and clearly in a state of shock. My colleagues have tried to persuade the jury that you carried out a deliberate attack on Mr. Neal in revenge for his decision to end your relationship. Is that correct?"
"No. Conrad and I had in fact made a decision to rekindle our friendship, and he had already informed his wife that he was seeking a divorce. I left that evening with no plan other than to go home to bed. I wouldn't have returned to the management center if I hadn't had an urgent call from reception."
"Did you make any arrangements with Naomi Woods to drug Conrad Neal, film yourself having sex with him, and to blackmail him as an act of revenge?"
"No, I did not. I hadn't seen Naomi Woods since I worked at La Maison."
"But you knew she was involved in some way with a documentary that Conrad was filming?"
"I knew someone by that name was involved. I didn't think for one moment that it would be the same person."
"The CCTV at the hotel shows Naomi Woods entering the hotel through a side entrance a short distance from Mr. Neal's room, and police reports suggest that she waits for you to pass by before following you into Mr. Neal's room. How do you explain that?"
"I didn't hear or see her. I know that someone forced his or her foot into the doorway, and then I remember Conrad shoving me out of the way. After that, nothing. I remember nothing until the morning."
"Mr. Neal says he recalls a powdery substance being blown into your faces by the intruder. Do you recall this?"
"No. I can't remember that happening. I wish I could."
"It would have been simpler for you to lie about that, and of course it would make my job so much easier if you had, but I confirm for the court that you have stuck consistently to the statement you first made to the police."
"It's the truth."
"Do you deny that you willingly or knowingly carried out an assault on Mr. Conrad Neal on the night of the 13th of May this year?"
"Yes, because I cannot remember and I would never have hurt Conrad. I have no good reason to."
When it was her turn to cross-examine, Mrs. Steele picked up her pen and held it delicately between finger and thumb of each hand before using it as a small baton to emphasize her questions to Lorna.
"Miss Yates,
Can you confirm for the court that you sent several texts from your mobile phone to my client, Naomi Woods, on the night in question? Annette threw another log into the wood-burning stove and closed the door carefully to avoid burning herself on the cast iron. Barney pulled the cork on their second bottle of red